Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Themis Claridis, former Republican leader at the House, Senate candidate. How you doing?
Can't complain.
Yeah, you had a good summer. I know lately things are tough. We'll get to that.
Yeah. I can't complain personally, but actually that's not true. Personally, it's been really tough with the flood, but I know we're going to talk about that.
Yeah, so we have, obviously your family has property, an important piece of property in Seymour. And we'll talk about the floods. We got UConn, Big 12. We got energy. We got presidential politics. We got cell phones in schools. We have Lamont third term. I think we should start with what happened in this storm. And I know we want to have fun and frivolity, but it's obviously something that you've been dealing with. I saw you with the governor the other day. Like, do you get that photo up because you're you? Like, do you say, hey, governor, if you come out here, can you come to my place? How does that work?
First of all, I was on the phone with the governor's office from the moment this happened. I was on the phone with Blumenthal from the moment this happened. I mean,
you have that kind of access.
I mean, I have the relationship. There's no question about it. But clearly, all of those elected officials are very concerned about what happened in Southbury and Oxford and Seymour. And
so you think Lamont did a good job? Because we get a lot of listeners who are like, they say he changed his plans, showed up there for 2 hours, and then went on to Chicago. Do you think he handled it appropriately?
Well, here's what I do know. He's come out with a grant program to get these small businesses $25,000 right up off the bat because they're going to have to wait for SBA loans. They're going to have to wait for FEMA. God knows how long that's going to take. And I have 14 of 16 tenants in our family's plaza that are almost totaled. These are small businesses. These are husbands and wives and kids that run businesses that every dime they make in their business, they put back in and invest and don't take anything out. And their businesses have been totaled. I mean, literally 6-foot waters coming through the front windows, crashing through the windows, crashing through the walls.
I was out there,
I've never seen anything like it. And even if you look at the pictures, you cannot grasp the gravity of what it was until you actually see it yourself. I've never seen anything close to that in my life. And so what I know is, I don't care if you're Republican or Democrat or what your name is. I mean, I wanted to run against Blumenthal last time, and he came down to our plaza, and I will take any help he's going to give us, because these are hardworking small business people, and I need them to get help to get back up on their feet.
So you think it has been handled appropriately?
Listen, nothing is ever handled perfectly, and there's always other things you can do. But what I do know is he was there, and he is offering $25,000 to these people of grants off the bat.
So what is it? So your family owns the plaza and leases out the space to these businesses, right? Mm-hmm. And so the insurance is up to you or to the businesses?
Well, we as landlords have insurance and flood insurance.
You did have flood insurance?
We did. But the individual businesses did not, because it is not in a flood zone. People have to.
You did it because you just might as
because,
well?
Because it's something you do when you own an entire plaza, right?
Even if it's not in a flood zone?
Correct. Wow. The problem is that this river, and it's called the Little River, ironically.
I was right next to it.
It should more accurately be called Little Stream, because it is 1 to 2 feet deep. Think about that. Not normally.
Yeah.
It's 1 to 2 feet deep. I mean, what kind of river is that? That's the river that was going behind, and, you know, that was 10 feet wide that ended up being 40 feet wide. I walked out on Sunday night at 6 p.m. when, you know, it was a rainstorm, like we all, summer, Connecticut, we get heavy rains at times. Nobody had any idea this was going to happen. I was on my way to my sister's house, and we said, let's just stop at the plaza. We go in there. We see the parking lot starting to flood. We walk into one of the businesses, walk out the back when you normally see 5 concrete steps, a road, and this little river, and I open the door, and I have 8 million pictures and videos of it. All you see is a river. That entire road was ripped up.
So you were there that day, that afternoon?
I was there, and And even when the governor was there, I mean, he actually was looking at it. And this is everybody's reaction, whether it was yours, mine, his. Oh, my God, what happened to the road? The rain ripped up an entire asphalt road, ripped out concrete stairs. You know, our entire parking lot at one point was the river.
Yeah. We'll put a pause in it. We'll finish up with a couple quick things on the storm and what happens next. The insurance part of it is what's sort of fascinating to me. We're with Themis Claridis. So we're back here with Themis Claridis. Yeah, we were just talking about, we talked about a bunch of stuff. Matt, I don't even know if you know about this. There's a fad with teenage boys chewing hard gum to increase the muscles on their jawline. It's called facial fitness gum. Yeah. Yeah. We could do it.
What's with that?
We should try it.
You want to get like an old pack of like 1992 Topps baseball cards with the gum in it?
Yes, that would be good. That would be good.
There's no harder gum than that, I guarantee it.
Or get some like...
That's hard.
Get some Chiclets.
I agree.
Remember Chiclets?
Oh, yeah.
They don't... The flavor lasts for about 5 seconds.
Double bubble also.
Double bubble flavor.
I love that,
but
it lasts five. But it's good for that 5 seconds.
The 5 seconds is
good.
You actually can't blow bubbles with it. I don't think really. It's not particularly good. Themis, just quickly before we get to a couple other items, next steps, because I feel like a lot of the media, and we're trying hard not to, will just sort of ignore this story, not ignore it, forget about the story until something else happens, whether it's funding or this or that. What is the next, like, how do you start the process of, like, cleanup? And do you contract that stuff out before you get any money? Like, how does it work?
Well, we started it immediately. We hired industrial cleaners, and they're now basically finished cleaning all the stores out.
No mold issues and all that stuff? You're going to have to gut it? Because we talked to a couple of businesses who literally have to start over.
Well, I did learn that last week that a technical terminology is mucking it out. I did not know that was an actual...
What does that mean?
...term of the trade.
You have to scrape off
all the mud. All the brown, mud, gunk, everything that is in there because, the floods came right through it, so there's... mud and dirt and everything. I mean, cleaning it out, then blowing it, drying it out. So we've taken care of all that. The silver lining to this is that all the buildings are structurally sound, so we don't have to take any buildings down, but it has to be full renovations on at least half of them.
So pull back to the studs and start over.
Yeah. Yes. And so we have contractors already in place. I mean, we started moving the next day. I mean, I was down there all day long, all last week, walking through that muck and talking to tenants. I mean, it's heartbreaking. Everybody's crying and, because it's their life. But it's almost like a death. You have to mourn it and then move on. And that's where people have move on, say, so we're cleaning and we're rebuilding and we're hiring contractors and, we're going to do it together.
Do you have a sense of timetables?
But the community has been amazing.
Yeah, I was very, very impressed with
amazing.
The people in that area.
Amazing. And, the Valley has always been like that. People like to, make fun of the Valley at times, but I'm going to tell you one thing. It has been my experience my entire life that they come together and they're always there for you. And people, I had like 75-year-old women showing up. I want to help clean out. Yeah. I mean,
a lot of pride.
And then, in addition, we have food share coming in to donate food the next three Fridays. We have all sorts of people donated food to give to the workers and the volunteers. And it's been so heartwarming to see, a community that your family has been part of your whole life and has given a lot to giving back and wanting to help.
Yeah, I hope it works out. Well, we'll stay in touch on this stuff because I don't want the story to get lost because some people are really going to have to go through a lot of fiscal hardship to get back. Themis Claridis, of course, former Republican leader in the House and former Senate candidate. I have so many things to talk about, and we have a couple segments. I want to get to the energy issue. I want to get to the presidential election. But I do want to give a quick shout out. The Greek Festival in Orange is this weekend.
St. Barbara's in Orange, Connecticut, Friday to Monday.
And
largest
it's
Greek
than
festival
one, bigger
in
than
the
Hartford?
Northeast, I believe.
Well, how do you know that?
Because I know things. Because I'm Greek and I know things.
And they're going to have all the food, obviously.
All the food, the Greek dancing, all the clothes and the tchotchkes and the art and everything that we have. Yeah, it's just very big.
Now, ouzo is the, like, That's the hard liquor of Greece, right?
The liquor. Well, there's
another one of those things where I want to say I like it, but I don't.
Well, I don't. I mean, I don't love it either. I mean, it's like Anisette, but stronger.
Right.
But I mean, Metaxa is also, you know, there's other ones that people.
But it's all sort of black licorice.
No, but not the Metaxa. That's like a brandy kind of thing.
I don't understand why people like that stuff. I honestly, if you're doing shots and stuff, I guess it's fine. But
well, even then, I mean, it like burns or holds down your throat. But I don't understand why people like a lot of alcohol, so I'm not really the person to
ask. Are you a non-drinker?
No, I'm not a non-drinker. I just don't really love alcohol, although I have to say in the past 6 months, no. In the past 6 months, my body is a temple, Brian, first of all.
Yeah.
In the past 6 months, I've become a cocktailier.
I've learned
how to make drinks. I never knew how to make one drink, and I always wanted to, so yeah. I took this class, and now I kind of add a new drink every week, and I make them for my friends.
I tried to make the Paloma the drink of the summer. It didn't work out great, but I do like
it.
Why? Because I like
grapefruit. Why didn't it work out is my point.
I don't think I made them good
enough. Not that hard to make.
I know, but I just didn't have, I don't know.
You know what I made? I made a grasshopper. Did you watch Palm Royale?
Uh-uh.
You have to watch it. It's, you know, in like 70s Palm Beach, and it's got this amazing cast, Carol Burnett, Kristen Wiig, you know, all these people.
Yeah.
And
the set design was cool. I remember that.
Yeah. And so she drank grasshoppers. I'm like, I remember that when I was a kid, you know, grasshoppers, pink squirrels, the whole thing. And I make it, and I even shave the chocolate on the top.
Wow.
Very cool.
Well, Matt and I don't get invited over to your house.
Anytime you want to come, I will try all my drinks on you.
All right, we're going to get to some serious stuff here. Coming up, we're going to talk about these Eversource bills. I actually want to ask you about UConn and the Big 12 and obviously the latest on the presidential race and maybe even cell phones in schools. Here with Themis Claridis, former Republican leader in the House and former Senate candidate. I want to talk about this energy bill situation. And I know, obviously, it's a little bit touchy because you're married to an Eversource employee. So I think you need to put your citizen and politician hat on and see if we can just talk about it as honestly as you can. The first thing I would ask you is, should government do anything here? And if so, what should they do?
Well, part of the problem is that government, the legislature, the governor, have passed bills that put mandates on these electric companies that then raise your rates, okay? They increase your bill. Now, I was there.
You're talking about the millstone guaranteed price? Because you were there in 2017.
That's why I was, and that's why I feel like I can honestly talk about it. You know,
was it a mistake?
Not being critical of other people. When you are a legislator or an elected official in any capacity, you have to weigh the pros and the cons to everything, right? Millstone was being very aggressive during that time for many, many months. They were threatening to close. They were threatening, you know, which would have meant hundreds of jobs being lost in Eastern Connecticut, which, you know,
struggling enough as it is.
Right. Needs all the help it can get economy wise, which means.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Legislators were scared to death that their constituents were going to lose their jobs and their economy was going to decline. These are important things. When you get elected to office, if you're a good legislator, you listen very closely to your constituents. And even though you know there are downsides to what you're doing, you have to look at both sides. And that decision was made because we didn't want to lose jobs. We didn't want the economy to falter any more than it was. And so there certainly was a downside to it, and that was increased costs. And we all understood that. But a decision had to be made. I mean, right. Yes or no.
And so, you know, you made the cost-benefit analysis and you knew there was downside. Now we're reaping the downside. So my question is, should government do anything about it now? And what should they do if you think they should?
But I just want to make this clear. It's not just the millstone bill. It's every time there's something environmental that comes up and it seems good and it feels good and it's, you know, green this and green that, and you know, people pass it and they don't pay attention to what the downside is. And right now, the answer to what should government do? I mean, listen, I know that the Republicans in the House and Senate yesterday came out with a proposal to use money to help people with the increase in their bills.
Do you support that?
To be honest with you,
I don't necessarily.
But what I don't support is breaking the caps.
So you don't want to tweak the volatility cap to maybe
get some more money off? The problem in Connecticut, a large problem, is we have been tweaking everything for far too long. And that's why we have one of the highest unfunded pension liabilities in the country.
So you don't want to change anything?
That have been paid down enormously in the past since the 2017 budget. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to make tough decisions. We all do it in our homes. There are 10 different things we want. And we think we need, but maybe we can only afford five of those things.
But do you want to give a couple hundred million from, because the ARPA money is not, they said it yesterday, but it's not an option. I think that money's spent. It makes more sense. They should have used ARPA money for this, because it's the part of this hole is because of the moratorium on people paying, and you're paying them back, which is because of the pandemic, and that should be federal money, but you can't now. So do you use some rainy day money or surplus money to?
I think they should consider it, but I do not support breaking through the caps.
Okay. What's the long-term approach?
If they use some surplus money before the budget is certified, it will not break through the caps.
I don't understand that, but
I know nobody else does either, so we don't have to.
Okay, so I'll just assume it's true.
It is true.
Okay, it's sure.
But the fact of the matter is, the legislature and the long-term strategy here
is
every time that a bill comes up in the legislature and for the governor to sign, you really have to consider every pro and every con. And if you're going to support things that are going to increase bills, that might be something that is beneficial, depending on what the downside is. But the public needs to know also.
Right, but there's nothing, you're saying there's nothing to be done to change the structural reason for the increased cost for customers.
Well, they have to repeal laws then. You know, that's if you're talking about structural changes, you know, costs are built in, these public benefits, and it's not just Millstone, it's other things, right? They're cumulative. So every time there's a bill passed that supports XYZ, that feels good, that's green, that's, you know, this, there's, it's that, and then it's an extra cost on your electric bill. And that's not because the power companies are saying, aha, we're gonna screw you today. It's because it costs them money. They're in the business of being in business.
Right, but that's the inherent issue I find, is that, and I don't have a solution for this, but you think of turning your light on as a right and not a privilege, right? I mean, you consider, like, you should be able to go in a room and turn a light on or heat your home. But these companies are for-profit companies. And so I think there's an inherent conflict with that. And so what about this whole thing with Pura and Marissa Gillette? Like, what's your take on that whole mess?
Well, there's a new Pura commissioner now, Dave Arconti. He was in the legislature. He was the chairman of the Energy and Technology Committee.
But they're still too short of what they're supposed to be.
The governor has made the conscious decision he was not going to fully.
Why would it, what does it matter to him not to do lower?
I mean, you'd have to ask him. But I think it was partially that, and partially he didn't think it was necessary to pay two more people. I mean, that's, you know, my understanding of what he said.
And the new guy, you think is going to help?
Well, I mean, I've actually talked to him, and I hope he's going to help. I mean, he understands. See, I think part of the Pura problem with Ms. Gillette is you're making decisions based on things that aren't just straight out policy decisions. I mean, a regulatory agency needs to make decisions on what the best regulation should be for the state of Connecticut, not because you like one group or you dislike another group.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
And you shouldn't be making enemies the whole way you go. I mean, this should be a collaborative effort. And I think that David Arconti will be a good addition to it, because he was in the legislature and he understands you have to make decisions, but you have to deal with the legislature and the governor and the whole the whole.
We got to take a break, but I find it fascinating that she is Marissa Gillette has sort of pushed back hard on the utilities, you would think that's a populist move that people would love. And yet the opposite has happened.
Well, because she makes enemies everywhere she
goes.
But
it's really fascinating that, you know, what you would think would be really popular hasn't come to bear because the prices have actually gone up as opposed to gone down. Themis Claridis, former Republican leader in the House and former Senate candidate here in studio. I want to now talk about UConn and the Big 12. Do you have an opinion? Do you have an opinion on whether you, if the Big 12 says we want you and you, football can come in 2031 after this next TV deal, but all the sports can join next year, do you do it?
I think they need to seriously consider it.
Will you answer a question directly?
I answer lots of questions
yes
directly.
Or no?
The Red Sox stink. The Yankees are great. I answer lots of questions directly.
I think they kind of have to do it, but I don't want them. I don't want them.
No,
to.
That's why I said they have to seriously consider doing it. I mean, there's. It goes back to the whole our prior Steve Cohen and the Mets conversation,
which we
right?
had off mic. Yeah,
right. But
yeah.
I mean, it goes back to that. He's not going to just throw money just to get the nice shiny object, but he's got to make the best financial decision on how he's going to build a team. I think that UConn has to look at this seriously, how it's going to affect sports and is it going to help them build sports? I mean, we don't want them to because we have the traditional view of where UConn should be.
Well, I also think that it's good for football and it's good for the budget, but I think it's terrible for basketball. I think that they go into that conference with how competitive it is and you lose the regional rivalry stuff. I think that UConn basketball will be changed forever.
I'm still annoyed that the Big East got broken up.
Well, we're back in the Big East.
No,
now.
I know that, but I'm just saying, like,
time
I still.
That Syracuse isn't there, BC's not there.
Right, I know, but the real Big East.
Yeah.
You know, the Big East as it was. Like, I'm annoyed over that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I believe in the regional rivalries. I believe in, you know, you have to focus on basketball at this point. I mean, I'm sorry to all you UConn football fans, but, you know, you're going to kind of mess with the basketball team to help the football team, and I don't think it really helps the football team.
Well, I mean, as long as you have a 40,000 seat stadium in East Hartford, 24 miles from campus, it's not going to, you know, I mean, they draw more for spring practices at these schools than UConn does for games. So I think it's a be careful what you wish for type thing. I am definitely cautious on it. I wonder if you had an opinion, you know, I don't know if you do, and we'll get to Trump and Harris in a second. This whole cell phone in school thing. You know, I talk about this stuff every day, so I have my hot takes already firmly in place. So I don't know what your feeling is.
I think, unfortunately, it's gotten out of hand. Kids with cell phones in schools, and I don't think they should have them. But, you know, you then get to the people will say, well, what if there's an emergency? Okay, well, you're in the school. You go tell the teacher, and the teacher's going to contact your parents, right?
Correct.
So I don't really see this. I went to a fifth grade graduation in Hartford this spring. And when it was all, it wasn't graduation. It was like their end of school, you know, concert.
Mm-hmm.
And the principal, you know, after he was giving all his greeting, have a wonderful summer, kids were great, the whole thing. And I just have one message for you. Please, I'm begging you, do not get your child a cell phone. Like, that was his main message. Do not get them a cell phone. Because I think it's the same reason social media, you know, I think is great in certain ways, but it's really been a detriment in a lot of ways. I think kids, especially younger kids, getting cell phones, I mean, it's diverting their attention. They're not paying attention as much in school. And, you know, all the bullying and all these horrible things we see, it's just worse.
Yeah. Yeah. I worry that in high school, they can do a lot of the stuff on their laptop. So if their phones are away and their laptops are out, it's not necessarily a huge improvement. I've been convinced of that by some people in education over the last couple of weeks. We don't have a ton of time. Trump-Harris, what do non-Trump Republicans do? Do you think she has a chance to win?
I think she definitely has a chance to win. I think we all agree that this election is going to be close and it's going to come down to the unaffiliates and the more moderate Republicans and more moderate Democrats. And I think with Joe Biden in there, people who thought they couldn't vote for Trump, but looked at Biden and said, but I can't vote for him because I don't think he's
not going to make four more years.
Forget 4 more years. I mean, just even competent to do the job at that point. And with Harris, I've heard a lot of people say, I don't agree with her on most policy, But I feel like at least I have a choice now if I can't vote for Trump. And I think that's what it's going to fall on. You know, I don't think either one of them is going to win anybody over per se. And besides people to the extreme right and the extreme left that are just solid Harris people and solid Trump people and nobody's changing them, everybody else, that's where the decision is going to be made.
Sure. Absolutely.
And I don't think they're going to win people over in a full-throated way. But I think people are going to say, listen, I have to pick one of them and I can't with a clear conscience pick fill in the blank.
As a politician, why do you think that they're protecting her so much? Like, why is she not doing more interviews? Why the hesitancy to engage mass media and be in more informal situations?
So I think we realize that there is a bias in the media to the left. There just is, whether it's Donald Trump or anybody else. And I think they...
Well, so why isn't she everywhere? Why isn't she talking?
I think they were having trouble. I think it was an interesting dynamic that I never thought I would see, but the media, even the liberal media, was afraid of Biden, right? They didn't want him to run because they were afraid he couldn't beat Trump anymore. And now they feel like there's all this new hope. Now, if I were in her shoes, I would be doing interviews. I mean, I don't know. I'll tell you why I think it is. I think it's because she has gotten this big high off of, you know, Biden's out, I'm in. So now there's a sigh of relief, right? I don't care who it is. There are people that are like, okay, phew, I can exhale for a second because it's not Biden. All right. So we're not like dead in the water out of the gate. We at least have a chance here. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the convention, it was last week. And so, you know, she got that kind of high, the Clintons, Obama, everybody who spoke. I think that they're just riding that high as long as they can. I think that's what's going on. But once Labor Day hits, you know, I think it's all going to change. And the more pressure that she gets, she's just going to have to start doing what she's supposed to be doing. I mean, they said they agreed to this debate on September 10th, which should be very interesting for both of them. And he's going to have to be careful because the way he handled Biden is not going to be the way he's going to be able to handle her.
I think that's right.
Right.
I think it's going to be unbelievably fascinating television, even though we always seem to say that. Like, I think it's going to...
Because it's been true recently.
Yeah. Themis, we got so much more on the table. Come back soon.
Love to.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.